Whoa, cause baby we are locked down. Yeah, nowhere else to go. This is Diffusion and you're locked on to Sweet Radio. Trust me, nowhere else to go. Lockdown, lockdown.
They can't break me down. They just can't break me down. Down. They can't break me down. Autism is a developmental disorder affecting millions of children around the world. In St. Vincent and the Grenadines, over the last 5 years, there has been a marked increase in the number of cases of autism being diagnosed in this country. In our last program on October the 5th, we spoke to Judith Wilson, and she gave an account of raising her autistic son, who is now 25 years old. In today's follow-up program, we speak to Raquel George. Raquel is the mother of an amazing young man, a student of the School for Special Needs in Kingstown. She talks about life as a parent raising an autistic child and the support and interventions that she has received, not just from the School for Children with Special Needs, but from other persons in her family and in other professional organizations, which have helped to mold Thomas and bring him to the stage where he is at today. We also speak to some of the staff of the School for Children with Special Needs, Kingstown. We speak with their principal, Nazim Smith. We also talk to Monique Burnett, Lonette Moore, Charlene Azor, Alicia Paris, Reba Cozier, and Sylvia Jack. This is Life, No Sugar Added on Sweet Radio SVG.
I would like to jump straight into what is autism.
Okay, well, from my understanding, it's a neurological and developmental disorder that affects children from an early age straight through their lifetime. So it's not, they're not gonna get rid of it. It affects their areas such as communication, socialization, and they also have some repetitive behavior that comes with it. And they might have a particular interest as well.
Okay.
Specific interest.
And I understand that autism is actually a disorder, a developmental disorder, and it is dealt with on a spectrum.
Yes.
What are the varying levels along that spectrum?
I guess it depends on the level of support that the child would need. So if the child needs very substantial support versus substantial support or minimum support. So there are some children with autism who can operate under the radar. So they don't have behavioral issues. They're probably a little antisocial, but they do get their academics down. So those would require very little support or minimal support versus very substantial, where the child might be on medication. The child may have speech issues or difficulties expressing himself or herself. You would also find that the child may have severe intellectual issues. So tons of accommodation would be required for that child.
And you said that it depends on the level of intervention required, and that children would have, you mentioned that there are different issues that a child suffers with.
Yeah.
How is a child diagnosed?
A pediatrician could do the job because the developmental milestones, they occur before age 3. So in conjunction with a pediatrician, hopefully it's not a one-off shot. So you can't diagnose a child in one visit to the pediatrician. But you would have that communication with the pediatrician. The parent, for example, would notice that all of a sudden my child isn't talking anymore or is doing something quite repetitive, and this wasn't happening 3 months ago. he no longer wants to cuddle, or is always by himself and is making a strange sound. So you have these conversations with the pediatrician. The pediatrician will also tell you what to look for. So they'll ask you questions along those lines based on the definition that we got first.
Raquel, you actually have a child who is autistic, young Thomas.
Yes.
And you, I suppose, would have noticed the things that Nazim spoke about. What was your experience like prior to his diagnosis?
Well, I first noticed he was different at 18 months. And one of the first things I noticed, he wasn't making eye contact. And as Ms. Smith said, he had repetitive behavior and stuff. And then he was talking, and then speech, everything cut. We noticed speech cut. Well, he never had a problem with cuddling because we always cuddle and soup, but he didn't want to socialize with other children. He used to throw a lot of tantrum.
How did you deal with that?
At first, because I didn't know what was wrong, I was handling it wrong. And then when my daughter did psychology in college, and she started to get an understanding of what was going on. And she sit me down and she said to me, "Mommy, something is wrong. I'm not sure what it is. But we have to take time and do this, do things certain way with him," and stuff like that. So, so after she finished college, she took a year home, and she started coaching him, like teaching him. She had more patience than me because she understand more than I did. And then she started coaching men how to handle this and how to handle that. And then when we took him to preschool at 3 years old, the first day he went, they asked me if he was deaf. I told them no, because we had taught that. So my daughter did an experiment where we had a biscuit paper, he was in the bedroom, and we started rapping it. And we see him running, coming. But then when he went back to the bedroom and you called him, he was responding. So that was what she did to make sure he was.
So your daughter is an undercover professional.
you were one
of the lucky parents.
Yes.
You had that support.
So then when he went there to the sub, I told them no. But then the teacher there, teacher Fenella Woodley, she realized what it was early, but she wasn't sure. So she went to a workshop with the specialist from Jamaica that the curriculum unit bringing, and she asked the specialist if she could come, at the school and did an assessment on him, and they did, and then I was there, so they told me it was autism, which is the first time I am hearing about autism.
You said that when you took him to preschool, he was 3 years old.
Yes.
But when you first started noticing that things were different, he was 18 months.
Old, yeah.
What happened over that extra 18-month period between your first noticing his symptoms and when he actually was diagnosed?
Well, as I said before, my daughter was working with him. And she was doing a good job because she stayed a year with him, working with him. So she was able to develop methods on how to calm him and, you know, how to meet him on his level. But we have always noticed there was an intelligence in him, even though he wasn't talking and stuff like that. And one of the things he was interested in, he used to like to watch the television, there was this cartoon, Spirit.
With the horse.
He used to sit down and watch Spirit all day. Once you take that from him, he's good.
So as we said before, certain habits.
Yes.
Right.
Nazim, you spoke about medications, and I have read that there are certain comorbidities that can exist with children with autism. What sort of additional challenges would that present for a child with autism and for the caregivers?
So comorbidity, I can think of children with autism who also have epilepsy. They have attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. They have sleep disorders. They have eating disorders. What am I missing? Sorry? Oh yes, and I was talking about levels of support, intellectual disability. So imagine if you're a parent and your child has to be medicated. You live in St. Vincent and the Grenadines. Is the medication easily accessible? The cost of the medication, the frequency with which you'd have to take that child for medical help, is it a case where the epilepsy can be managed? Do you need emotional support to deal with the child? The child has ADHD. Do I need to seek the assistance of a psychiatrist?
Mm-hmm.
All of that. The side effects of this medication. The sleep disorder. Is my child going to wake up at 2 a.m. Religiously? How do I entertain him or her? Feeding. We have students here with interesting
palettes.
You know.
Very.
So I suppose the teachers can talk about that. So that's another issue. So that would be really expensive if my child is eating a particular type of food.
Raquel, you said that when Thomas was diagnosed, it was the first time that you were hearing about autism.
Yes.
And I know that, well, I believe that there's a certain level of ignorance, and when I say ignorance, a lack of knowledge about autism. What would you say, generally, any one of you, is the level of awareness in St. Vincent and the Grenadines?
I don't think not much. That was my own observation. It's now coming along, but much persons who are not really aware of the disorder per se. We had children having the disorder, but the persons dealing with them did not know what it was. Right, but internet, social media, I think the awareness is growing, especially since now we have more children being affected with this disorder, especially the boys.
Hmm. I don't think it's where I personally think it should be. It's not there yet. Especially where instances where persons are directly affected, the parents. Well, Raquel is a whole, is a different person, right? Raquel would get involved with her child. But you have instances where parents have their children diagnosed with autism and they are not educating themselves about the disorder. So where are we going? We're not going anywhere fast.
So what do you think is the reason why people are so laid back in terms of their approach to dealing with it, even after they've gotten a diagnosis?
I was going to say, I don't think it's that they're laid back. I think it's the fact that they're afraid. They have this ingrown fear of what society would think of them. Because from way back when, you would hear people are saying, oh, the child is now disabled because of something the parents did in the past or something your grandmother do, and now it come back and catch you. Just say, they would say that now it come back and catch your child. So I think it's because of that they have maybe a sense of fear or even a sense of being ashamed, so that they don't want to go and they don't want to do the research and they don't want to carry their child out there to let's say expose them to what other persons would say, to the ridicule, to the skepticism, to persons pointing fingers at their child. So therefore they decide, okay, my child has autism, he's been diagnosed, she's been diagnosed, but I need to keep this under wraps because I don't want that stigma attached to my child.
So one, they are afraid of being judged, and secondly, they're trying to avoid their child being exposed, as you said, to ridicule.
Yes.
And
yes.
The stigmatization. And you have a fairly significant student population here, which includes autistic children. What percentage of your children would you say actually have been diagnosed with autism?
Current student population, 30%. I have 62 students on roll, and 30% have autism.
And what sort of services do you offer for those children who are suffering? What are the interventions that you provide for children on the spectrum?
Okay, apart from academics, our school offer practical life skills, vocational skills as well. What not really to me where it should be, because most of the teachers are not really trained in certain areas, but we make best with what we have. So if Miss Bonnet, for example, she can cook, so she will do home ec, right? Maybe not trained in home ec economics, I know. But we will do that. We make best with what we have. Our practical life skills, vocational skills, academics.
Some level of emotional support, I would like to say. We reach out to the parents. We encourage them to get help. We know that they're really afraid. But we try to have lots of sessions with the parents as long as they're willing to listen, to actively listen to what we're saying, because we think about the student in the long run.
So you don't just support the students, you support the parents as well.
Yes. That's what makes the difference. So look at Raquel. Her son is sailing because of the involvement of the home, how much support he has outside of him.
Okay. You spoke about vocational training and other things that you do. Can you just give a bit more specifics on that? Paris?
Well, we do life skills as well. Students are taught to do basic things that they can't acquire on their own, or sometimes the parents do not teach them. Take the time out to teach them at home, they rather do it for the children.
So what are we looking
at
specifically?
So you get ahead quickly, teaching them probably to comb their hair, to brush their teeth, how to groom themselves, all these things we do here to assist the children in daily life.
And the vocational skills? Ms. Moore, what are the vocational skills?
We have the agricultural program, and if you go downstairs, there's a workshop also that some of the students participate in to get their hands moving, and teach them a skill when they leave here.
Okay.
We also do sewing, right? And the children really love to be engaged in that aspect, and you see the creativity coming out and stuff like that. So
there's really nothing for the parent to worry about. It is they who perhaps would set the children back if they don't bring them out as soon as possible and get them engaged.
Exactly, yes.
Okay. Raquel, how would you say Thomas has developed since he has come to the School for Children with Special Needs?
Wow. Tremendous.
What sorts of changes have you noticed?
Well, he came here, he had a lot of issues where he was throwing a lot of tantrum because he still didn't have any speech. And Miss Azor was his first teacher. So when he had tantrum, she figured out a way how to calm him. And I also sit down and discuss with her, you know, the methods of calming and so. So I walk along with what she walks with. So we instilled that at home. And then he went up to Miss Jack class. And every day I come, I would interact with Miss Jack. What has he done today? Where can I follow up at home? And stuff like that. So along with the teachers and the support from the teachers and walking along with the teacher, he wasn't able to develop fast.
Okay. And you said that you, when he was having his tantrums at home and before you brought him to school, you felt that you were dealing with them wrong, dealing with his issues in an incorrect manner.
Right.
What changed once you brought him here?
Well, I look at Miss Azor's method, as I said before, and I work with that. And that is how we, you know, come about the change.
Okay.
But when he started to speak, that's when it really lessened down.
No,
because he wasn't able to express himself.
Communication.
Right.
What is interesting with Thomas, although he couldn't speak, he was internalizing, he was processing. Because when he came to my class, he wasn't speaking much. But after he started being able to express himself, he said to me one day, he said, when I came to this school, Miss Azor helped me, she kept me calm, and she was saying who got him upset and so on. And I was so shocked because, I mean, he wasn't speaking, but he remembered. You know, he remembered what happened when he got here, and he couldn't speak.
Mm-hmm. So the wheels in his brain was actually turning. Yes. Mm-hmm. We just didn't know. I suppose that's why some of them are so frustrated. They have it all in there to come out, but they don't have the language, the communication skills that's delayed and so forth. So of course it's frustrating. I want to say so many things. I want to ask questions and I can't.
when Thomas first came, you know, I looked at him, I observed him. I realized that this child was on the higher level of the spectrum. And I don't know, I guess maybe the experience that I had helped me to figure him out. What would have caused his triggers, what to do, my manner, my tone of voice, giving him options, allowing him to step outside of the activity and calm down. And I found that it worked, and what I did, I talked to him a lot. I spoke to him, I spoke. Even though he was not responding, I knew that he was processing, and that really, really worked. And then you see, he started to blossom. So within the year, I told the mom, I said, I'm not going to keep him back. And she was like, already? I said, no, I'm going to send him up to Miss Jack. And I told her that he was going to be in very good hands. So as she said, she worked along with me. She gave me stuff that she would have researched. We would have sat down and we would have chatted. And I really, really believe in the communication between parent mm-hmm. and school. It goes a long way. It goes a long way. And that was tremendous in terms of bringing Thomas to the place where he is. I realized that he had likes for certain things, and if anything would upset him, I said, okay, I wouldn't do this, I would do that, right? So it really worked. So figuring them out early really helps, knowing what they like, knowing what they don't like, and taking them away from things that would trigger the tantrums, and even sometimes getting them into a place where they don't want to do anything.
Well, that kind of answers what I was going to ask you, because we were focusing a lot on Thomas. And yes. I was going to say, because it is a spectrum disorder, people have varying levels of
yes.
complications. So how do you deal with them individually?
I'd like to add to
the policy. Yes, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, because he had love spirit, we found that first this used to be hangers. When he upset, you take a hanger, all the hangers in the house, and that would calm him. But then after he started looking at spirit, he loved horses. So one day we went into Chinese store and we saw some horses that when he was in preschool, so I bought some for him. So like when he get upset, we used to give him a horse. That used to calm him, but then he moved from horse to dinosaurs. That he knows everything about dinosaurs. That he makes dinosaurs. He draws dinosaurs.
He's fascinated with dinosaurs. He'll teach you about dinosaurs. Trust me.
And you had to put dinosaurs into your content in class. So we are teaching letter songs and so on.
So teaching, in a sense, involves a measure of observation, because you have to study the child to see
each
what
child
they're
individually.
Yeah, but then he's moving up from dinosaurs. I mean, like things like he wants to know about the earth,
right.
The different seasons.
Yes.
He does a lot of scientific research and stuff like that. If he asks you how this is built and you didn't tell him, he will go and research it for himself.
So even though he doesn't communicate as much as he did before, he still has his means of communicating with you.
He does communicate. Yes.
He's more sociable.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
But,
he's playing with people now.
Yes.
And I guess my workplace too, it's like everybody love him. Everybody communicate with him. And then his home is just not just in home, extended family. Even those who in overseas, they will call, they will talk to him, they will ask him what he wants, they will send it for him and stuff like that. So Thomas has a lot of support.
Yes.
He's also very inquisitive.
Very inquisitive. Every morning he would come and we would hold conversations and he would be asking questions galore. And some of the questions he would be telling me the answers to, especially when it comes to the dinosaurs. Up to today we had a discussion on what is summer. Because he was asking me about summer. He heard somebody mentioning summer on the television. He said he heard the word summer. So he wanted to know what season is summer and what does it mean.
Now, in addition to the challenges of people just, I think maybe I would use the term burying their heads in the sand and not wanting to acknowledge the fact that there is an issue and that the issue may possibly be autism. Okay, I know some people may not even know, based on your own experience, Raquel, that there's something called autism which may be affecting the child. So in addition to that,
issue of early intervention and therefore finding support as soon as possible. What are the other issues and challenges that you see associated with autism and raising autistic children, educating autistic children? Miss Burnett, you don't speak. Let's talk.
Okay. I remember years gone by, I had children who were autistic. First, you have to find out what they like. I had a student who had interest in planes. So if I am doing, let's say, math and recounting, I had to make sure that I use planes to so that he can count and he can actually participate in the lesson.
So one of the challenges would really just be trying to figure out where the child's interest lies and what stimulates them.
Yes, you must.
What are there any other challenges that you see?
I think the lack of formal teacher training in the field of special education, because I think we are only doing trial and error for most parts. And if you are not the teacher who would research, then you're not doing the children as a good service, any justice at all. So the lack of teacher training I see as one of the big issues or challenges when teaching our students here.
One thing I find is to be a great challenge is the willingness of the parents to accept guidance from the school and when you're given instructions and so on how to manage your child and how to help your child to improve or to grow, whatever. The willingness of the parent to accept that sort of help from the school is very lacking.
I was about to ask though, because it came up indirectly earlier, when you do your interventions between, let's say, 7:30 and 4:30 when the children are here, what happens, how are the parents prepared to deal with the children after they go back home and on weekends and during school holidays?
Go ahead.
I really don't know what they do. Sometimes I think that they don't do anything, because when we get the children back, they would have regressed. Right now, I know we are using the platform of the social media, informing the parents, like taking videos, posting them, and we're asking them, we are encouraging them, we're pleading with them to communicate with us, show us what the children are doing so that we will be merged, so that we will be in one accord. Sometimes that never happens. So it's as if they drop them off and they intend for us to work the miracles that they don't even want to try. And then we send them back home, and then they come back again, and the story goes over, the cycle.
So, Raquel, I see you here supporting Charlene. What do you do?
It gets me angry. I was in an autism group, and a lot, when the group now started, whole heap of parents with autism, autistic children showed up. But I don't know if they came there and expecting the people to walk some sort of
miracle.
And that group went less and less until not even happening. But my thing is, and as I always say to the teachers here, if when you don't work during the day so hard with these children and they get home and the parents don't follow up, it's going to be harder for the teacher.
Yeah.
And a lot of parents just leave these children like, okay, they ain't value nothing. I will have to take care of them for the rest of their life. But it's not supposed to be like that. No, these children are very intelligent. Very, very intelligent. They were surprised in so many ways, as I've been surprised in so many ways, because sometimes, the other day, my son was like, we're going to walk with me, and he was like, Mommy, something is wrong with white people. I said, why you say that? He said, they always having pet in their bed and pets kissing. He said, what is wrong with that? He said, good thing black people are strong and have senses. And I stand up and I was like, I think you have to blow for me to really. I was like, sometimes he throws some questions at you that you are like,
outside of
you understand me? And one of the things Thomas does, he and his father, I just get ahead with him. He does go, his father does interact with him plenty, because after the father accept and understand. And then his heart's urgenting now. The father do a lot. When he gets home in the evening, they will go into the bedroom. They will discuss and stuff like that. And sometimes he chose questioning at his father, and the father just have to call me because he's like, you know. No, he just take us by surprise because sometimes the things that thinking, and my daughter told him the other day, she said, you're thinking more beyond your 8 years. Because sometimes he just throw some question at them to let us.
Amazing. But what do you do with him? I mean, you talk to him after school. Do you, as teachers, give Raquel a plan that she has to work with on evenings or on weekends, or is this all of Raquel's design?
Raquel is one of those parents, when you say run, Raquel is there on the racetrack and asking, what color shoes do I run in? How fast? Is it a long distance? So Raquel is, I suppose, the best of the best, right? So Raquel even finds support for her son during the summer holidays, during the summer holidays when school are closed and so on. Raquel tried to have him socialize as much as possible in the community. But I want to go back a bit. We were talking about challenges. Educationally, you heard about the academic competence of students with autism. So here at the school, we have challenges in accessing educational resources. You heard about their likes and their attachments. So finding teaching resources, I would say, we've been quite creative. Some of them would fidget. So to find these fidget toys, you know, we have to get them, we have to order them from abroad. For those with ADHD and so forth, there is something called a weighted vest that we can't access here, you know, things like that. Those with communication issues, we use, for example, a communication system. It's a software that you get a license for, and so on and so forth. We've been really blessed otherwise, though, you know. We've forged partnerships with other schools abroad, and we have friends and school family all over the globe who've been willing to help us. But I would love for the parents to access that level of support, parental support, and for them to ask, how else can I help my child?
So you need parents, more parents like Raquel?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, we need Raquel to preach.
Yes.
Now, Thomas is a unique child, and each child has different issues. They're able to communicate on different levels. You can talk to Thomas, and Thomas can talk to you. Thomas could actually keep you on the back foot. But for other children who are not necessarily as vocal as Thomas, how do you deal with them when it's time to, say, establish boundaries and teach values and those sorts of things?
Well, if the child is not speaking, but the child can see, we use a lot of pictures. So as Miss was saying a while ago, we use the something called PECs. So you communicate with pictures. And also, if you want them to transition between sessions during the day, you use something called a virtual timetable. So again, so if you're in a normal, typical school, like a mainstream school, then you would have a timetable written something like that, right? But in our classes, if you go to most of the classes, you will see something in pictures. So they follow it. For some reason, although they're not speaking, they would follow it, as long as you teach them what it is, because something is still going on up there.
Right?
If I could go back with the challenges, though, Nazim was talking about other challenges in terms of resources. I think our main challenge here is the lack of an adequate plant to teach our children, for our children to explore. If you look at the classes, I have a very, very small classroom. I make the best of it, make best use of it, but it's not always the best for our children. Our children has come with a lot of sensory problems, mobility problems, discipline, and this small area. If you even look at the school, we have one little ramp coming up there. Now, if we have a child with autism or a different disability that is wheelchair bound, then that child is confined to the ground floor unless you want to take that child up. And if I am in a wheelchair, I don't want anybody to lift me up to bring me upstairs. I should be able to access upstairs. So accessibility to your own school is an issue.
It raises the issue of what else is done at the school, because you do deal with, you provide services for children who are on the autism spectrum. But there are other disabilities and challenges that children have that you deal with. So it sounds to me as if we're actually broaching a new show right here, because we need to talk about the full range of services and everything else that you have to grapple with at the school for children with special needs. Now, with other children, if they are what we would say, what we would describe as misbehaving, you can talk to them and say, listen to me, I do not appreciate that. I need you to do X, I need you to do Y. How do you communicate that to children on the spectrum?
In 2020, you say to children, I need you to do this, and they agree? I want to hear those children. Listen, so we they sense what's going on with your emotions, and they can wile you up. We try to set boundaries. Mm-hmm. We know what the students like, so individual children, and guess what? We do behavior modification here, but the thing is, we flip the script. We know what they love. The students who, if we say to you, if you continue to scream, we're taking away your computer time, they're silent. They want more computer time. They want extra time playing dress up. We have princesses here who go in their castles and so on and so forth. So we find out what the child likes. Of course, there are instances where we need to give them time out. Unfortunately, a lot of the challenging behaviors are not dealt with at home. So our work is twice as hard. So we try to get the parents to buy in and attempt some of the behavior modification strategies that we're doing using at school.
That is why I support the teachers. So when I see they use a method, I try to use the method at home. One of the things I do with Thomas is that if you want this, I negotiate with him. So if you know you want this, you have to do this before you can have this. When I send him to summer school with a teacher from Catholic school, he was there with 79 other students. And he was trying to manipulate this woman because he realized she fell in love with him. So when he can't have his way, he will choke tandem. And I said to Hannah, let's listen to me. You have to teach him, show him the boundaries. Tell him if he cannot do what you ask him to do, then he cannot have this. And she took my advice and she did that. And in the matter of the second week, he settled down. He interacted with these children. He even drove the Victoria Park with them and the teacher teaching and stuff like that. And then after the summer school, his speech improved plenty. And then, but the funny thing that was quite fascinating, if he meet the 79 of these children, he know their name, he remember them, and every
that's
one
true.
Of them know him.
Amazing report.
That's true.
Yes.
That's one of the strengths.
And the teachers, you have the, for instance, the lady Miss Brown and the school secretary Miss Smith. Anytime I walk down that road, he has to go in and say hello. He will go in his brown classroom and sit down. And stuff like that. And those are the things that I did too. It was expensive, but I didn't look at the cost. I have to help my child.
Nassim, you said, well, you've all been saying that one of the challenges is the support that the child gets from the parent once they leave here. Do you see that perhaps the parents themselves might be challenged and that's why they're not able to provide the support that you think is necessary?
Yes, well, before they even attempt to provide that support, they have to accept that my child is different, that my child isn't going to wake up and grow out autism or any other disability, that my hard work is going to pay off. It may not. My first attempt at behavior modification or taking this child to Victoria Park or to the supermarket, maybe he's gonna throw a tantrum, but after a while, you want that child to live a normal life. Chances are we're gonna outgrow them, you know. So we have to step up, and the sooner the parents accept that something is going on with my child, but I can access help, I can access intervention. I think that's that powerful step. As long as that happens.
Raquel, you were saying that sometimes it was expensive. Could the financial challenges also be a setback?
Yes, yeah. Because sometimes I always have to be buying molding clay and different stuff for Thomas. And it costs. You understand? It costs.
So and we perhaps need to have some sort of a support organization where we encourage people to contribute.
Another factor is diet. Because I did some research on Thomas' diet and realized certain food causes sensory issues.
Causes so what?
Sensory issues. So I had to, I removed things with gluten, casein and different stuff from his diet. And he wasn't speaking. And when I removed these things, his speech started come more. And I normally cut down the amount of sugar. I try to give him more or less natural stuff. For instance, I don't even give him vitamins from the pharmacy. I give him stuff like sea moss and all natural. Because I don't want anything with coloring or anything to, you know. Because there was one time there was this snack he liked and I realized he stopped after it. And one day I said to him, I said, you want one of those? And he said, no, mommy. I realized when I eat those, it gives me a headache. Yeah, so he stopped. It's when I asked, I'm going to realize now, it gives him a headache, so that is why he stopped.
Raquel, you're very involved in Thomas's development. And as much as Thomas is still a brilliant child, and he may not be as challenging as some other children would be, I'm sure that it is still very demanding on you. How do you cope?
With the support. The support at home with his sisters, his father, his grandfather. That's the main person in his life, my father. When we are not there for him, his grandfather is there for him. He may not be able to support him financially, but he's there. His grandfather will sit down if he wants to do maths. His grandfather will do maths with him. If he wants to draw, you know, his grandfather, different things. So in terms of, I have it good, but financially sometimes it's very rough. Sometimes I have to ask a brother, sister for help and such stuff.
So once you're dealing with someone with autism, you find that you need a wider support circle than most other people would have.
Right.
And as teachers, one of the things you said, Sylvia, is that you are not necessarily trained in special education. So it suggests that a lot of it is your own personal research and trial and error.
Yes.
And you have 30% of your student population being autistic on different parts of the spectrum. So you have to come up with almost 30 different plans for your students. How do you cope with that, the fact that you're not specifically trained in special education, not all of you, and the fact that these children, some of them, you still don't understand thoroughly, and every day brings its new challenges. How do you prepare yourself for that, one, and how do you wind down from that at the end of the day?
I think that the teachers here, those who are on staff, definitely feel their work here is their purpose, they're serving a purpose, because they would have gone a long time. Not because you don't have a degree in special ed, or we do a lot of professional development in service training, and the teachers think outside the box. They go to do research. They meet in small groups and they share what's working and they share their challenges and so forth. Like I said, we have friends in other schools in other parts of the globe. We're affiliated with other educational institutions. So there's that buffer. But I would say that the teachers' willingness is that key. Winding down, we take school home with us. Well, I know I do. I sleep and dream about something that I couldn't figure out during the day and all of that. But apart from that, quietness, I practice meditation.
Anybody with any other special coping strategies?
I'm still learning how to cope.
I would say, in terms of coping strategies, I look at all of the highs instead of focusing on the lows. So sometimes I may be frustrated about what happened today, but I remember what happened yesterday, and what happened yesterday was something really profound or something really great happened in the class. So I would say today was just a bad day, but we can get better tomorrow. I can reevaluate myself, I can reevaluate the needs of my students, and so it pushes me to go forward for them and for myself, in terms of I know I want to be better for them and I want them to improve. So I think that's how I cope. I look at my good days instead of focusing on the bad days, and know that I can try my best to have more good days than the bad.
And the bad days will come. We are teaching children with special educational needs. We don't expect that every day is going to be honky dokey. So, but we have to be prepared, right? And I think for me personally, if you are prepared, then you're good, right? You have a backup plan. I always have to have a backup plan. If you're not prepared, you come here all flustered. And when you're flustered, the children feed off that. They pick up for some reason, they know.
Yes.
So it's just having a plan, being prepared. Nazim was talking about friends from overseas. We went to England for 2 weeks, 2017. And I would have seen things and techniques used at the Avenue School that I incorporated into my class. I mean, not because they're in England, the UK. We don't expect that everything would apply here. But I found the things that work and I use them. So I have a new student and she's challenging, I must say. But I use things like this. I use this with Thomas when he was with me too, because he had my apron and some sort of thing in it now. When he had problems taking turns, we used something like this. So he had to wait, and then when it's his turn, and he will take this and give it to a child. And I have the new one doing this one, right? And it is working.
So as you said, a lot of pictorial and visual representation.
If I wanted to sit, instead of me shouting sit, I just show her that. You teach them what it is. She's intelligent, so she knows. And she, if you want her to be quiet, then you show her that. Sit quietly, stand up, and so on. So I use a lot of pictures with them.
We spoke a lot about the challenges and the different issues that arise. And Reba, you mentioned focusing on the highs. What are some of the highs? I'm dealing specifically with the autistic children. What are some of the highs that you have experienced during your time here with your children?
I remember I had a student who had difficulty when we doing like reading comprehension. He can read, but understanding what the passage was all about, he cannot really answer question. So what I did, he had phone, so we will communicate using the cell phone. So I will ask him like question, how are you today? And if he says good, I will reply. He can read, so I will reply, please give me in a sentence. So I noticed that days after, when we're in the classroom now doing the reading comprehension, and I am reading the passage and I ask him questions, after I will say to him, remember, you're not going to give me this in one word, I need sentences. So I encourage him all the time to give it sentences until he understands now that when you ask a question, you're supposed to give in sentences instead of just one word.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Any other high points anybody wants to refer to?
I think we will be talking about the same child here. I took over as a relief teacher from Ms. Lodit when she went on her vacation. And I introduced technology to the classroom because I'm into technology. So this particular child, he doesn't have much focus and much concentration, and most of the time he will be in the corner singing. And so I was teaching language, actually reading comprehension, and I asked a question, and I was so shocked. I miss me. I turned around to really figure out who is telling me miss me. So he actually listened to the question and was willing to answer, make a reply.
Well done. What would you say is outstanding, perhaps one of the most outstanding moments in Thomas's development? Okay, don't give me everything, just one.
I'll take you to the one of the things I find remarkable about him. When he was home over the months, he didn't like the Zoom class, he didn't like the online class, because he was saying it's not the same, he's not seeing them, he can't touch them. Then he came back to school for a couple of weeks, but when he was home, he was doing his own thing. One day he will do maths, another day he will do grammar. But what we find remarkable is that he sit down and practice how to write properly. Trust me, you won't want to see that handwriting. He actually sit down. Actually sit down and taught himself how to write proper. But guess what he used to do? Dinosaurs. Because he could have called all them big names with dinosaurs. So that is what he, and then one of the things too, the autism come with the dyslexia for him. And one day I got upset with him and I took away everything. So he have this dinosaur book, I'm trying to get him to read this book. And he just won't bother with us. So when I took away everything, I heard him reading and I was like, is he really reading? So I go around and I said, you reading that book? And he said, yes, mommy. I said, read the book and point on every word when you read it. And he pointed on the word and he reads. I say, how come you learn to read this book on your own? My son went on the internet, looked for a reading app. We didn't know he was doing that. Look for an e-reading app on his tablet. Then he put it, he got it on the TV, go wherever, and sit down with that reading app for all that month and reading along.
So if I come back in another year, Thomas might actually be keeping the class himself. He might be conducting a class by himself.
He might interview you if you're lucky.
So I was like, when he showed me the app, I was like, my word. That's what he did. So all the months he was, and he will watch his cartoon and he will get his full laugh. But one of the things I find remarkable about him, if you look at this, he learned something from everything he looks at. You understand? He could tell you something from everything he looked at.
Raquel, what are your dreams for Thomas?
Well, he said he watches cartoon The Robinson, so he said he wants to be a Mr. Robinson, Cornelius Robinson, which is a scientist. He wants to create things. He wants to invent things. And every day, and one of his other dreams is going to St. Martin Secondary School.
Well, it sounds to me as if he's going to be there before most people get there, at the rate at which he's going.
When he have homework, I don't have to say, get your homework done. He wait till his sisters come home, he do his homework, he take it for them to check it, to make sure, you know. Sometimes he was doing a new math, Miss Cosia teach him, and I'm not good at math. But the time he go to Ronnie, he say, Ronnie, I can't understand this one. Ronnie say, oh, how come you can't understand this one and you don't do all the rest? So she just gave him an example. He was, oh, okay, I know how to do it. And then he sat down, he did it, and then we checked it, and things like that. So he's very independent. He likes to do a lot of things on his own. If he wants help, he will ask for help. But he more or less. So normally we don't rush him anymore to say, come and read. We allow him, so when he needs the time to do that, we make the time to do that with him.
Okay. And I know we touched on it in different areas, in different aspects, but what sort of advice would you want to give to the general public, maybe to the policy makers, to parents, in terms of how we react and how we respond and how we interact with parents and children who have children on the autism spectrum?
As an educator, I would preach for early intervention. I want that to be legislated. I want for us to charge parents of students with disabilities who bring them to be registered at age 8 and they've never been inside any formal institution, you know. So it's hard for us, it sets us back. So I would scream for early intervention. And again, the parents would need that support, the acceptance, and believe that my child should go to a preschool. My child should be registered at 4 or 5 to access primary education, early intervention.
Raquel, what would your recommendations be?
Well, I seek a lot of help from Thomas. And there's this lady who did an assessment for him in preschool, Mrs. Maxine Borges. She's a specialist from England. And she had given me a lot of notes on what to do. She had coached me and things. Thomas, the earlier, the better. And one of the advice that she gave to him, she said, send your son to the special needs school where he could get proper structure. And trust me, I have no regret. I appreciate the teachers here, and I'm happy I started him here. Because one of the things I realized, if I put him into the regular system, the damage that could have caused, and how hard it would have been. So I said to a lot of parents who have stigma about this school, I said, hey, my son goes to this school. Nothing is wrong with the school, but this is where your child needs to be forget about the stigma, do the right things. But then some of the parents who come to me, a lot of parents come to me who know me, and they still don't heed the advice because the stigma. And another thing parents need to do, stop hiding your child, even though that child has a disability. I have never hid Thomas. I took him everywhere with me. Even though he threw a tantrum and his children or whatever, I still take him up because keeping him home and denying it, what could have, that would have done for my son. I accepted early.
And obviously it has paid off for Thomas.
I accepted early. I seek whatever help I could have seek early. Trust me, there are days it was frustrating, but I never give up. I keep walking. I keep looking for ways. I did a lot of research. I try all kind of things until I find what works.
Early intervention, yes. Research, very important. Exposure, acceptance.
And diet.
Very important. Ladies, thank you ever so much. Raquel, congratulations to you. And what's your daughter's name?
L'Oreal Duncan.
Well, amazing.
Well, them actually work with him, L'Oreal and Ronnie, two sisters.
Well done, ladies, well done. And to you, all of you here at the School for Children with Special Needs, every single one of you, thank you very much for the work that you do. I know that you are not necessarily the people who we see when we think of any sort of positive responses and positive outcomes for our children with special needs. But just sitting here and listening to you, to your enthusiasm, to your creativity, to your accomplishments, it is just amazing. It is overwhelming. It touches the heart. I want to thank you very much. And I want to appeal to the public to give you the support you need, where they can provide the tools that you spoke about, provide the tools, if they can give financial donations, give the financial donations. Perhaps if they can just come and maybe observe, those of you who are parents with children with disabilities, please, this has been some solid advice, not just from teachers, not from the professionals, but from a mother who lives it every day. This has been Life, No Sugar Added on Sweet Radio SVG. I am because we are Ubuntu. They can't break me down. They just can't break me down. They can't break me down. They just can't break me down. Don't. They can't break me down.